The episode you're about to listen to is actually an interview from our Before You're Ready Summit, where we interviewed 10 amazing women who started exactly where they were with what they had right now to make their dreams a reality. So if we reference the summit in the interview, that's why. Enjoy. I also just wanted to let you know about a free ebook I've created on how to procrastinate-proof your week. It's packed with 7 days worth of productivity tips to ignite imperfect action and kick procrastination to the curb. From supercharging your Monday motivation to making sure you get all your work done on Friday afternoon, we've got every day of the week covered. Head to agirlinprogress.com/procrastination or find the link in our show notes to grab yours. Welcome to A Girl in Progress, the self-development podcast for millennial women working on themselves for themselves. We believe it's possible to strive to become the best version of yourself, while also accepting yourself exactly as you are. Whether it's giving you a glimpse into the daily routines of inspiring women or sharing the stories of those who started before they felt ready, this podcast is all about encouraging you to take imperfect action towards your goals and find productivity and success on your own terms. As for me, I'm your host, Emma Norris. I'm a journalist, author, cheese enthusiast, imperfect action coach, and the founder of agirlinprogress.com. Let's get into the episode. Hey, Steph, how are you? Thanks so much for coming on the summit.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good to chat to you again. I know you're one of our first podcast guests about, I guess, around this time last year. And you're actually one of our most popular podcast episodes as well. So,
yay, I'm so glad to hear.
So you are a launch strategist. You have your own company, Steph Taylor Co., which is all about igniting ideas with high impact launches, which I love.
Yes.
You're also the host of Social Let, which is an awesome podcast where you give bite-sized marketing advice. But I know you've gone through a few different, I guess, stages or iterations of your career. So if you don't mind, I'd love you to give us a little bit of a lowdown on where you've come from and where you're at now.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, my story is very similar to a lot of people who, you know, the overachieving type. You go through high school and it's kind of expected that you're going to go to uni and you're going to study a good degree and get a good job and all of that. So I went to uni. I actually did accounting and finance, which is so completely not related to what I do now. Yeah, somehow I still can't manage to do my cash flow statements properly and like all, you know, like all of that stuff. My budgeting just never works out. Anyway, so yeah, did that at uni, got a pretty good job out of uni. Actually, it was a really good job out of uni. And I was really bored. I just found that I'd needed that creative outlet. So I started doing a lot of social media management for some local cafes. And probably about a year into that, I realized, hey, like if I'm doing this for other people's businesses and it's actually really successful, then maybe I could start my own business and I would be able to do this as well. So around that time, I was going through the I Quit Sugar 8-week program and I just fell in love with how good I felt not eating sugar. And I kind of wanted to spread that message with people. So I decided to start a health food subscription box called the Sugar Free Box, which was every month or every quarter, people would receive a little goodie box with sugar-free snacks that they could eat. So I did that and probably about it was about 2 weeks before I launched that actually, where I was hustling pretty hard. I was getting up really early in the morning and working on this business before I was going to my day job where I was still working like, you know, another 10-hour day. And after about a couple of weeks, my body was just like, you need some sleep. You need some veggies. You need something. And I actually got super sick and I ended up in hospital for a week. And this was, 2 weeks out from launch date. So talk about pretty bad timing.
Yeah. But your body was definitely trying to tell you something.
It was not happy. It was not impressed with me. So then I was in hospital for a week and I was on sick leave for another week after. And my first day out of hospital, my boss at the time rang me up and asked when he could drop my laptop off. And I was just thinking, like, here I am. I can barely stay awake long enough to watch an episode of Orange is the New Black. How am I meant to be doing some work? Like, this is ridiculous.
Oh my God, I can see why he's not your boss anymore.
No, I know. So I got back to work a week later and I was like, I actually never cry. I've never cried at work other than this one day. And I just remember getting back and there was this huge pile of work on my desk because everyone had kept piling work on my desk in my absence. And it was just overwhelm. So I think it was about 2 weeks after that that I ended up resigning and going all in on my business. And then I very quickly ran out of money, as so many other people relate. So I went to go and work for a startup and I was doing their digital marketing and their content creation, which really made me realize just how much I loved doing that kind of stuff. I was already doing all of that for my own business and for a lot of the brands whose products had been in the boxes, but then actually being in a business and doing that marketing and that content creation for them, that was really exciting. So from there, the next iteration of my business became, well, actually, I want to run a marketing agency. And that's when I launched Wild Bloom, which was a marketing agency for wellness brands. Again, following along with the whole wellness trend because it's pretty important, right? So I launched Wild Bloom and I did that for, in its client form, it was about 9 months before I launched my first online course and then realized, wow, like there's a lot more magic in this online course creation thing than there is in the client work thing. And I was getting pretty drained, pretty slammed with client work. So I thought, you know what, let's fire all my clients, let's run this thing under a personal brand, and let's just make it online courses, consulting, and strategy. And that's kind of where I am today, except then I had to go and break it again and decide to niche down into launch marketing rather than just general marketing.
Awesome. I have so many questions because you've done so many things. But I guess to start off with, one thing that really stands out to me about your story is that there may have been times that you launched before you were actually ready. Like even your body might have even been telling you you weren't ready because you're trying to do a million things at once. But it seems to me that you are someone who's just figured it out anyway. Like you sound very scrappy. You've just been like, okay, well, maybe I wasn't ready, but I figured it out. Would you say that that's the case?
Oh, 100%. I don't think I was ready for any of those little launches along the way. If you can call them launches, pivots, whatever they are. I don't think I was ready for any of those. And every single one of those involved some fear of, oh, is this the right decision? When I decided to close the sugar-free box down and launch Wild Bloom, that was so terrifying because I thought, oh, people are going to think I've failed just because, you know, I'm closing a business down that's no longer serving me, that's not helping me create that lifestyle that I want, that's not giving me the flexibility to travel. People are going to think, oh, she's a failure. And then again, launching Wild Bloom around the same time, it was, oh, like I don't have any money to put into this business. Is it going to work? Is it going to be a waste of time? How am I going to, you know, pay my mortgage? How am I going to feed myself? So every single one of those was before I was ready and was not without fear, that's for sure.
Yeah. And how do you break through that fear? Do you kind of just feel the fear and do it anyway, like just kind of silence that voice?
I think I'm a big believer that if the fear is showing up, it's actually a good sign. It's a sign that you care.
So true.
Yeah, I think if I wasn't scared, I'd be like, I guess the opposite of fear is complacency, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's, I know which one I'd rather.
It's easy to say when you're not dealing with that fear, but I think the easiest thing or the best thing to do is to just, embrace it. Say like, hey, fear, like almost think of it as this third person, right? Hey, fear, like I see you over there. That's cool. Like you're going to do your thing. I'm going to do my thing. Let's just coexist and both do our own thing. And you just accept it and keep going.
That's an awesome way of thinking about it, kind of externalizing it. It makes it a much easier to sort of face it and be like, oh, you're like, I don't actually have to take this on board. Yeah. I can choose what I'm going to think about it. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. I think a lot of people use that technique with anxiety as well, like thinking of it as an external thing, not thinking of it as part of them.
So helpful.
Yeah.
100%. And on the flip side, is there any times in your career that you do wish you'd waited a bit longer or maybe gone a different way? Or do you kind of think that's just all sort of led you to where you are now?
Well, okay, so I don't regret any of how my journey has unfolded, because I believe like everything that's happened has happened for a reason and it's all brought me to where I am now. But probably could have waited a little bit longer before leaving the stability of the old corporate paycheck, because that was quite nice. And I didn't really appreciate the stability of getting paid fortnightly until I wasn't getting paid fortnightly. And
what is getting paid fortnightly? I don't remember the last time. And I really wish I appreciated it when I had it. Like, I literally have been paid. Well, you know, when you're freelance, you get paid whenever you feel like paying you. But like a fortnightly paycheck, that sounds like heaven.
And it is. And I'm a big believer that that income's really good for being able to reinvest back into your business as well. I think I could have grown the business a lot quicker. I could have hired people to do the parts of the job, the business that I didn't enjoy doing. And I potentially could have actually ended up building that into something to sell rather than something to close down if I'd had, you know, more money to put into it, because basically I was funding my living costs out of my savings and I was funding this business out of my savings and there wasn't a whole lot of savings to go around.
Yeah, 100%. But then I, on the flip side of that, when you do outsource a lot, like something I found myself, you have to work more to like afford those people. And then it's like, what am I doing here? So it's such a hard thing figuring out, you know, to outsource, not to outsource, to have a part-time job and reinvest that. Like, I guess you just have to make it work with your circumstances that you have at the time.
That is, it is a tricky one. And it's something I've also been dealing with a lot. And I've just realized, I think after the break that I've just had where I've had 3.5 weeks of not doing anything, I've realized actually maybe just delegating that task and then using that time to think of other ideas rather than thinking, oh, I need to be working to bring in more money. Just opening up that space in your brain so that you can do what you do best, which is the ideas and the, you know, the real like high level big picture stuff. Yeah, exactly.
It's, I think it's about picking the things that, like, if you're going to not do one thing, then in that time, doing the things that are actually going to like move the needle and drive your business forward rather than just like more busy work. Because otherwise kind of no point. And I want to ask you about firing your clients. That's something that to me sounds terrifying. How was that a bit of a journey for you? Like, was there any fear that you faced around that time?
Oh, I sat on the decision for so long. I really didn't know what to do. I, like, in my gut, I think the feeling was I really should fire them because I wasn't happy. But then I thought, oh, but, you know, like so many people try so hard and it takes them so long to get so many clients. And I did have some really genuinely lovely clients that I really did enjoy working for. But I also had some that were pulling me in all sorts of different directions and that I wasn't happy working with them. So I sat on it for ages. And what actually happened was I did a strategy session with a business coach, and it was almost like I went in there asking her for permission to fire my clients. It was such an easy thing for her to say.
You knew what you needed to do, but you just needed someone else to be like, yes, do that thing.
Exactly. I just needed somebody to say, like, you're not an idiot for deciding to fire your clients, basically. Because I went in there and I said to her, I said, hey, look, I kind of don't want to do client work anymore. She said, easy, fire your clients. And it was that simple. Yeah. But it wasn't something I did all in one go. So what I did was I fired one or two, and then I waited until I'd got enough membership revenue or course sales revenue or consulting or strategy in to cover the lost revenue from the ones that I'd fired.
Yeah, that makes sense to do it like that. You were very strategic in how you did it. and you mentioning your business coach made me think of the fact that, like, do you think it's ever too early to invest in things like getting a business coach, masterminds, that kind of thing? Because that sort of stuff isn't cheap. But, like, yeah, what's your stance on that?
I think, so masterminds, I am a big fan of, and it doesn't have to be an expensive one. It can be just even like 4 or 5 local business owners that catch up, right? But that one, that I find so important, because those people become your support network and the people who keep you sane when you've got that idea that's just like going round and round and round in your head and you just need somebody else's opinion. Those people are, you can't put a price on that. That's so valuable. In terms of a business coach, I know there's so many different opinions. I didn't work with one until I was about 2 years into business. And at the time, I probably wasn't real. She probably wasn't the best fit for what I needed at that time.
So many different types with different specializations, like finding.
Yeah. The important. Yeah. And it's really interesting because I'd always assumed, you know, like you have one business coach and that's the coach you stay with for your entire time in business. But then talking to some of my friends who are business coaches, they all say, no, well, everyone has different strengths. You pick a business coach for the season of your business that you're in. So at that, in that season, I don't think I really needed one. I was actually doing pretty well with what I was doing. So I guess, yeah, it's a bit of a, I don't know. I don't know if I'm the right person to answer that question, really.
No, but it's interesting to hear your perspective on it, even just from someone who's worked with one, because I haven't personally worked with one. Yeah. And I know that I'm always like, you know, really sure. I'm sure they could give me insights. You know, when you're too close to things, sometimes you need someone external to come in. But then I've just outsourced a bunch of stuff instead. So it's like, yeah, I think it'd be hard. It can be hard to figure out when is the right time and whether that is the main, you know, the biggest thing that you're going to benefit from at that time.
And, but also before just picking a business coach, say, okay, well, this is what I need a business coach for. Maybe you're really struggling with getting on top of the numbers and things in your business. And then you'll go to somebody who's stronger in the numbers. Maybe it's mindset that you're really struggling with at that time. And then you go to somebody with that mindset. So it's not just, oh, I need to get a business coach because everyone else is getting one, or I need a business coach because I need feedback on my ideas, because a mastermind can give you feedback as well.
Yeah, and with business coaches, you can sometimes just do like a session or two with them. There doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
It could be you've just got a specific question you want to ask them and you want, like, you know, someone who's dealt with that before to go through it. So it doesn't have to be this like thing that costs you like $30,000.
Yeah. Yeah, like I like doing, what I've done the last 2 years in a row is at the end of the year, I've done a strategy session with a business coach to, you know, map out my goals, map out my action plan, so that it's not just me setting these targets and these actions that I need to do. There's actually somebody else saying, well, this is what you need to do to move forward in your business.
That sounds like the perfect way to like dip your toe in the water with that kind of thing. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
And why launching? Like, why did you land on, helping people with their launches?
So the same business coach who empowered me to fire my clients, when I had a strategy session with her, I walked in there and I said, look, like next year I want to launch this course, I want to launch this course, I want to launch this course, I want to launch this course. I think it was like an Instagram one, a Pinterest one, I can't even remember what some of the other ones were, probably an email marketing one. And I had all of these ideas and I was like, but the problem is nobody knows me as being good at one thing because I'm such a generalist. And she looked at me and she said, well, it kind of sounds like launching is your thing if you love it, because nobody else really loves it. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a very good point. So that's how launching became my thing.
And what about in terms of like, so you've launched a couple of courses now and like membership sites. I guess I want to talk about like the concept of being ready, like in the context of that, like what sort of, how long are you normally working on those courses before you sort of put them out into the world? What's involved in it?
Yeah. So the actual creation of a course is, that's a whole nother world to launching, but I've launched courses where I've only had the course ready up to outline version. I haven't recorded it, or I've recorded maybe week one. And that's the best way, hands down, to test whether somebody actually wants to buy it or not.
So you had one module done and then you launched, like put your sales page up and...
Yeah, one module done. The rest were outlined, but I hadn't even put them into slides yet. And... Yeah, did a webinar to the sales page to the course. And because people bought it, I ended up making the rest of the course. If people hadn't bought it, then I wouldn't have made the rest of the course. And that's like, that is the ultimate launching before you're ready, right? Pre-selling. Yeah. But it's also, it takes so much of that fear out of it because you haven't invested all of this time and energy and potentially money into something that's not going to sell.
Yeah, that's so funny you should say that, because I'm exactly, that's where I'm at with my course. I've like written my outlines, but I haven't like started recording. So you're making me think like, that's an interesting way to do it. But yeah, I think sometimes it is okay to just dip your toe in the water with these things and gauge interest before like diving all the way in. Like, it's a smart way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. You can ask, you can survey your audience all you want, but until they pay money for it, then you don't actually know if they want it.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, you know, a thing like, you sound like, I know you've been on the podcast, you're a very productive person, and I guess to do all these things that you've done, like, you obviously can't procrastinate too much. Do you have any like productivity or like anti-procrastination like go-to tips?
I really laugh at this because in like the hour before or like the 2 hours before this call, I've been for a walk and I had lunch and I was reading a magazine. So I'm not that productive. Well,
maybe
I am productive.
Smarter, not harder. It sounds like you've done like a lot in terms of creating balance in your life over the last like couple of years.
Oh, definitely. That has been the biggest thing. And I still struggle with this mentality like, oh, I need to be at my desk. I need to be working. I need to be, you know, doing an 8, 9, 10 hour day rather than, oh, hey, I outlined 12 podcast episodes in 3 hours. Like, yay, that was really good. You know, it's so I'm getting a little bit better at batching things, working smarter, putting my phone in the other room. That has been the game changer.
Yeah.
The minute whatever you're working on gets a little bit difficult, it's like, oh, like, let me just reach over here.
Phone? Yeah.
Yeah. Let me just quickly check Instagram and then the answer will magically come to me. And it never does. Never.
And I know you traveled a lot over the sort of last couple of years. Did you like full on do the digital nomad thing for a while, or did you kind of just like dabble?
Yeah, I did 2.5 months of solid digital nomad around Europe in the middle of winter, which was really fun. I feel very bad for my now ex-boyfriend he's not my ex because of my bad work habits, but like at one point I was replying to emails in front of the Eiffel Tower.
Oh my God.
Just to give you an idea of like how bad my boundaries were.
Yeah, so you've come a long way since then by the sounds of it.
Yes, but it is really hard. That was the one thing I struggled with quite a lot, being that quote-unquote digital nomad, is you really have to take that opportunity to work whenever you can because, you know, like any downtime is potential work time. And it's just finding that boundary between, okay, now I'm working, now I'm traveling, now I'm resting. And I don't think I really did so much of the rest time.
Yeah. And with I guess, like becoming a digital nomad for the time you did it, did you feel like ready to do that? Like, was that something you had to deliberate on for a while? Because there's a lot that you sort of have to pack up at home and a lot of like loose ends you usually have to tie up before you're going abroad for a while.
Yeah, there was about a 6 month planning process. It wasn't so much that it needed 6 months of planning. It was just we bought tickets for November and we thought, and it was would have been maybe, yeah, April or May. And that was just the deadline. And that was actually what made me launch that first course because I suddenly thought, oh, I need a bit of cash in here. Like I've got clients paying me, but then there's also so much cash going out and I don't have like enough to, you know, cover all of the unexpected costs that happen when you're traveling. So it gave me 6 months to get my business to a point where I was earning enough I could travel with, to launch that course, to pack everything up, to, you know, get those client expectations, get the clients to know what to deal with or what to expect from me while I was traveling, to know that they couldn't just call me in the middle of the day because I was on the other side of the world and I'd be fast asleep. So there was a lot that went into it, and 100% I did not feel ready. When even sitting on that plane, I did not feel ready. I was terrified, but it was so worth it, and it was such a learning experience as well.
Yeah, once you rip the band-aid off of these things and you're like there, you're like, oh, I don't even know what I was worried about. But sometimes the lead up to these things can be like, when there's a lot of unknowns, it can be scary, but the good kind of scary.
And because I was still working at that startup as well, I had to wrap up that job, onboard their new hire, like everything there as well. So it was just an extra thing. It was a very stressful time. And I was doing my master's as well. So I was doing uni exams too.
Oh my God. That's insane. I don't know how you did it, but well done. Have you finished your master's?
I have one subject to go and I just haven't done it for the last 2 years.
Yeah. You're so close.
Sorry, Mom, I'll get there one day.
Yeah. Hey, you've done most of the work. You're just going to tick off that final thing. Awesome. And obviously working with a lot of people who are launching, what do you think are some of the like most common barriers that you see people to like just getting that thing out in the world?
Oh, yeah. My audience isn't big enough. That's probably the biggest one. The I'm not ready is such a big one, but that also like I'm not ready. Oh, I need to, you know, get more followers. I need to become more of an expert. I need to launch my new website. Whatever this thing that we're telling ourselves is the thing that's stopping us from launching it, you know. So those are two big ones. Oh, what if I launch and nobody buys? What if it was a waste of money? What will people think of me? That's such a big one, especially in people who have come from professional industries where it's almost frowned upon to go out and do your own thing. Who am I to be teaching that? I'm not an expert. There's just so many. I could go on for days.
I feel like I've thought almost all of these, and it just makes you think so much. Launching is mindset. Like, you really have to be tackling those sort of like deeply rooted issues. I mean, or you can just ignore them and just do it, which is kind of what I do.
Yeah, you can ignore them. And that's what I did with a couple of launches last year and the year before, where I thought, oh, I'm just going to push through, it'll be fine. And then you actually end up subconsciously self-sabotaging it quite a lot. Yeah. It would show up in things like I wouldn't write the post webinar, like I wouldn't write the sales emails until after I'd done the webinar. And then I'd think, oh, but nobody's bought yet, so there's no point me even writing this email. So subconsciously you're just not doing what you're not showing up how you should be showing up, basically.
Yeah, you don't even realize it at the time, but like, yeah, maybe looking back, you're like, ah, that didn't go as well as it probably could have if I had have actually like addressed these underlying issues that are going on.
Yeah. And also like another big part of the mindset, of course, is the selling. That's another huge objection. Oh, I hate sales. I can't sell. And then of course, you know what happens then when you go to sell to your audience, you seem uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like you transition from like your webinar or your live or whatever you're doing into your sales pitch. And it's like your voice suddenly just goes to like, oh, and by the way, I have this thing. Like, would you like to buy it?
Because you know, and it's really want, like, whatever, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. And then it's almost safe because it's like, oh, well, nobody bought because I didn't really try 100%, or, oh yeah, nobody bought because I'm really bad at sales. It's such a mindset game.
Yeah. Is that what you help people with as well when you're sort of, you know, when you're working with launch strategy?
Yeah. So I have like a strategy plus mentoring option where they have access to me, and that's like 90% of what I end up helping with is mindset, and the other 10% tends to be tech.
Yeah. I feel like that makes sense. And what is the biggest piece of advice you'd give someone who's been thinking about launching for a while but is having some of those mindset issues that we spoke about before?
Oh, just one tip.
Oh, a couple is fine. However many you can think of.
Okay. I guess know that nobody else feels ready, and that the absolute worst case, like what is the absolute worst case that can happen, right? Maybe it's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. Maybe you lose a little bit of money. That's not fun. And a lot of us, like most of us, can't afford to lose any money. But the sun's still going to come up tomorrow. Your family and your friends and everyone's still going to love you. Nobody's going to think of you as a failure. Just because you failed once doesn't make you a failure. Like, you know, J.K. Rowling was rejected however many times before Harry Potter was accepted. And we don't think of her as like a failure or a reject or any of that. So why would anyone think of you as a failure just because you've had that one fail? So that's the first one. The second one, I guess, would be fully prepared before the launch. So get everything done, written, planned, scheduled, so that when you're actually launching, it's not a matter of, oh, nobody's buying, so I'm going to give up. It's all going to go out to your audience, regardless of how you feel about how that launch is going, because more often than not, that last day of the launch, right before doors close, that's when people sign up, not on the first day, unless you have a really good incentive for them to sign up.
Yeah, that's awesome pep talk and awesome practical advice. I love it. You nailed it. And lastly, where can everyone find you? And do you have any offers or anything at the moment that you would like to direct them to?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at stephtaylor.co. My website is also stephtaylor.co. My podcast is called Socialette. It's a bite-sized online marketing and launching podcast. And I do have a free ebook called The Complete Roadmap to a Killer Launch, which you can grab from stephtaylor.co/ebook. Sorry, not ebook, /launch. Awesome. Getting confused with another ebook there.
Too many ebooks. Awesome.
Well, you can go to stephtaylor.co/ebook, but I can't guarantee you'll find anything there.
Fine. We'll pop all the right links in the notes. Thank you so much, Steph, for coming on and sharing all your launch wisdom. I feel very inspired going into my own launch, so I'm sure everyone listening to this feels the same.
Exciting. Thank you so much for having me, Emma. This has been so much fun.
Thanks for listening to the Girl in Progress podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure you hit subscribe and leave us a review. You can also check us out over on agirlinprogress.com, the online destination for women working on themselves for themselves, or get social with us on Instagram at _girlinprogress. Can't wait to see you there.